Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, once again.
You sound so surprised.
I was like, why am I here? What is this? Yes, I remember that.
Why am I here?
It's Les Sources Open. There you go. We should come up with a translation. I don't know.
Nailed it.
I don't know. One of those weeks.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us online live. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean from the Guelph Podcast channel. Today, we will be looking at the infrastructure wish list for the city of Guelph. City Council had a meeting last week about what projects should be prioritized when federal money comes through in the upcoming budget. And we will parse that list and offer our 2 cents on how best to address the infrastructure gap. And then we will look at the first 100 days of the government that will be offering those funds, the Trudeau administration. Last week marked 14 weeks and change since Justin Trudeau took office. And while a number of his moves have been lauded, some have generated controversy, and there is still much trouble ahead. We'll rate how those 100 days treated Trudeau and whether that energy can be maintained for the next 1,300. And finally, we'll enjoy, speaking of enjoyment, we'll enjoy the slap fight between Rachel Notley and Ezra Levant as the NDP government in Alberta banned Levant's The Rebel from the government pressers, only to renege once other media outlets, somewhat surprisingly, came to the Rebel's defense. But first, Supreme Court of the United States Associate Justice Antonin Scalia passed away in his sleep last Saturday, instantly provoking the latest controversy in obstructionist tendencies from the Republican-controlled Congress. Scalia was barely cold when many Republicans, including those running for president, declared that Obama better not even think about naming a successor. So there's that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was right out of the gate. And that to the Republican figured very prominently in the debate. Was that the same day or the next day?
It was the very same day.
I happened to catch a bit of it. I didn't catch the Scalia discussion, but...
It broke around 4, because I had come home from going to a matinee of Deadpool, oddly enough. And then, they broke the news about Antonin Scalia, and then the debate started at 8. This was around 4 p.m., and then the debate started at 8 p.m., and that was the first question, was about Antonin Scalia. And Trump said they should delay the Senate.
For those of you that don't really know about Scalia, he was probably like the uber-conservative judge on the Supreme Court of the United States. And I sort of heard of him on and off, just decisions here and there, usually involving, the groups that conservatives generally see as undesirables, let's say. I don't know. Lots of decisions. He wasn't very big on the gay community and same-sex marriage.
No, he voted against it.
Put it this way. Anything you think of in your head that a conservative would support, he was the guy. And part of his – sounds like he was a very intelligent man too. The most interesting thing come out of it was not only his – I mean, you obviously need to be of supreme intellect to be on the Supreme Court, you would hope, that he was really good pals with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who represents kind of the – let's say the left on the Supreme Court, or we could say Republican Democrat. Why not? They were really good chums. They did opera together and hung out. I guess they spent time on the D.C. District Court or before they both.
I believe so. Yes.
Before they both became on the Supreme Court of the U.S., and that was that's where they became pals. And Ginsburg's comment was very interesting in that she liked him because of. Part of what he did was everybody had to up their game.
Yeah.
The way he was able to argue points was that he was so thorough and so, correct in his mind, let's say, because he had this, I didn't even know what this was, originalism. He was one of these people that was of the view that the Constitution of the United States is a pure document.
Right.
It represents exactly what the founding fathers liked. And of course, lots of people are of that view, including the guys that took over in Oregon.
Yeah.
You know, there's people have this view as like the Constitution is the purest document you can get. Funny enough, one of the articles of the Constitution, Article 2, is that the president is supposed to nominate Supreme Court judges pretty much right away.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't Scalia and it was another Supreme Court judge that had passed, he would probably want, or at least use his leverage or whatever, to lean towards somebody conservative. However, if you're one of these constitutional purists, it's like The president nominates somebody when there's an opening. The end. There's end,
like,
of discussion.
There's
right?
like three responsibilities of the presidency enshrined in the Constitution, and one of them is to name the Supreme Court vacancies, and the others is like about negotiating foreign treaties and things. And but it,
well, the rest is just stuff, right?
Is like stuff that's been taken on over the last 200 years and change. Yeah, this is the thing. He wasn't like crazy conservative. I mean, you can read into some of his decisions. He might have been of the crazy conservative variety, but he wasn't crazy conservative. He wasn't crazy like we would think Ted Cruz is, who said this week that if Obama gets to name the next Supreme Court justice, then the United States can kiss the Second Amendment goodbye, and they'll be – this is something he actually said. They will be sandblasting religious symbols off of monuments of soldiers buried, you know, off the tombstones. If you go to some place like Arlington, they have the cross or the Star of David or the crescent moon of Islam, or, you know, whatever the religion was. Even atheists have their symbols on their tombstone. They would be sandblasting those off tombstones if Obama gets to name the next associate justice. He wasn't that kind of crazy. And
no.
I'll just say there. I looked up some of his decisions, and there's actually an article I found that was like five. It was called Five Decisions from Scalia That Progressives Should Be Proud Of, or something. It's something to that effect. And one of them was that he was a strong defendant of the Fourth Amendment, which was I think it's about unlawful search and seizure, making sure that was kept tight. And one of the decisions he was involved in was about a case involving police using infrared to look inside a house. He came out strongly against that, and I think a lot of privacy proponents.
It's about property.
Right.
Pursuit of property, right? Or whatever.
Right, but it's also about privacy, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Another one was he said that the EDA has a right to regulate carbon. So even though there was that decision last week, fairly controversial decision, that one of Obama's executive actions regarding something to do with the environmental regulation should be on hold until it works its way through the court, he was in favor of that. When something like that did come before the court, he did rule on the, you know, environmental side of things. So he wasn't... He wasn't all bad. I mean, yeah, he may have thought that, you know, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, and, you know, you shouldn't get an abortion under any circumstances. But, I mean, like a lot of people, his decisions were not cut and dry.
No, and he had a long career, too. He was nominated by Reagan, so he's at least 30 years. Was it 86? He's coming up on 30 years of being on the Supreme Court. So, that's a lot.
It was 30 years.
30 years, exactly.
It was 30 years this year. I think it was 86 he was nominated.
So that was a lot of decisions. And, of course, this is why the... like uber conservatives are losing their minds, is because their 5-4 advantage, it seems that they had for a lot of decisions, is now gone. And I think the way it works, until somebody is nominated and filled that position, there'll be lots of 4-4 ties. And I'm not sure how that works its way out. I think it goes back to another level of, you know, you're back to the drawing board when it's even.
Right.
So you either need to convince somebody to come over to your side, or it stays a stalemate, which I think results in no decision. It's just sort of suspended until they can come up with – until it goes back again.
Well, what's interesting is you're right about that. If it's a 4-4 tie, then it defaults to the lower court opinion, the last court before it comes to – which is usually the court of appeal.
And if they can't sort it out, it
– But what's interesting is the swing vote on the Supreme Court is Kennedy. And if you see this in a lot – Kennedy was the swing vote in the gay marriage case from last year too. So, you know, as much as people may be thinking we're going to be looking at a very split court, there's a lot of issues coming up where the court may not be so split. And people may be wondering if it just doesn't make more sense. And we've seen this already. There was a senator who spoke out the other day that said, you know what? Like, there was this uniform front over the weekend that, like, no, we will accept no recommendations from Obama. And then there was a crack in the arm. I think it was a North Carolina senator who said, you know what? Yeah, we should consider a name. Because it's not – it's not just – they Mitch McConnell comes out and it's like, no, we will hear no. It's like – he didn't say anything like, we will pass someone we consider worthy. Obama has to give us like a strict set of conditions, you know, for someone we consider. It was like, no, we're not going to consider anybody at all. And here was somebody who kind of broke ranks yesterday and said,
he said, I will.
It's like, yeah,
very quietly from the back of the room.
Pretty much.
And as you know, you've probably seen it, well, you do, you know, Adam, but over the years, they have this vetting process where they just sort of haul you in front of this committee, really.
Mm-hmm.
And they grill you for a while, and then they say, well, okay. Generally, I don't know in terms of people getting rejected outright, but there is this, and I guess there have been in the past, but there is a vetting process. It's very interesting. You know, you're probably better off watching the highlights in terms of if you ever are curious as to how it works. But this is the thing. People don't realize that there is a list ready and waiting for these things. It's not as if, you know, somebody dies on the Supreme Court, and that includes the Supreme Court in Canada, and it's like, oh, my God, who are we going to get? There is lists of these people, candidates, ready and waiting to go. There's no question, because it's not an overnight thing. So there's, you know, if Obama wanted to, he could have the next day said it's going to be you. Because they do that with their presidents, right? The president dies, the vice president gets sworn in almost right away, and then there's a pecking order, and I think it's the head of the House of Reps or something.
Yeah, the speaker.
Yeah, it's sort of like the succession for the royal family, too. It's like they all die in a plane crash, number eight. So it's not as if there aren't rules in places for this.
If you've seen King Ralph, you know about it.
Yeah, there you go. What, me? Yeah, that's right. What do I do now? So, yeah, it's not as if it's just thrown thin air. And the other thing is, too, is that most of the people on the Supreme Court, because it's a lifetime position or of a good age, Bader Ginsburg, who I mentioned earlier, I believe is 82 years old.
Right.
So it's not as if he was only 79, not hugely old, but it's you know, we retire out senators here in Canada at 75. You know, you reach a certain point. And, you know,
well,
there's a lot of wisdom of the elders, let's say. But, you know, there comes a time where I would say within the next few years, he isn't going to be the only vacancy on the Supreme Court.
No, yeah, exactly. And some people are saying it could be like as many as three in the next term. The next president will have to appoint. I don't know if Scalia was factored into that, but
no, I think it was the surprise. I mean, it was so sudden.
Yeah, well, I just mean in terms of people who might be next to, like, certainly Ginsburg is in the pen.
She's going to live forever. I don't know.
And probably Kennedy as well. I mean, there's certainly a couple of them. I mean, four of the current justices on the court have been named in the last 10 years. So, you know, about half the court is relatively young and healthy. But you're right. I mean, this is, again, speaking of strict originalists, you know, this was a time when you lived to 65, that was considered a ripe old age. And it's worth noting, too, and I looked this up a couple of years ago, there's actually nothing in the Constitution that says to be on the Supreme Court you have to be a lawyer or even have a law degree. So,
well, I think that's why Joe Biden was – is he a lawyer?
I think so.
Well, yeah, I think everybody hits a certain position as a lawyer. Hillary's a lawyer.
9 out of 10 people in government are lawyers.
So, similar in Canada anyway, usually. Yeah. But, yeah, you could just – I guess that's just the way it was back in the day when this pure original document known as the Constitution was written by the hand of the founding fathers or – well, it was. But, yeah.
From God's brain to their hands.
It gets all weird, because God isn't really mentioned until he was added in to the American Constitution. My God, we could probably have a whole show on that. But, yeah, so we'll see what transpires. I believe Obama's going to nominate – somebody. I don't see why not. Even just to piss them off, he might just say, yeah, this guy.
And Obama's clearly been in a mood to sort of tick people off, because there was a press conference, I think it was yesterday, where he's like, no, I'm pretty sure Donald Trump's not going to be president. But yeah, I think he has said he's going to name someone. I think there will be an acceptable mourning period for Scalia. But I mean, it's the ultimate authority in law in the country, and it seems bizarre to have people running for president to suggest that they leave it open till next January at the earliest. I mean, and it's all, by the time the next president's won, it's almost February. At least by the time they get all the furniture arranged how they like it in the Oval Office.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to name a Supreme Court. I mean,
say, I want Thomas Jefferson's desk. Yeah, it's usually something like that. But
yeah, I mean,
if the shoe was on the other foot, the Republicans would have nominated somebody the next day.
St. Reagan nominated Kennedy in his last year in office.
Oh, there you go.
So, I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Like, it's without precedent. No, it isn't.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Not only is it with precedent, it's with precedent in like,
with their guy.
Because
Reagan is their guy.
Yeah.
Reagan is the pantheon of gods as far as they're concerned.
Oh, exactly.
Because he nominated Scalia, among others.
I'm joking when I say St. Reagan, but for like people like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, he is St. Reagan.
Yeah.
Before we leave this topic, can we just mention for a minute the conspiracy theory?
Sure.
That Obama had him knocked off. Maybe not that, but there's
doesn't take long. Who was it, Glenn Beck or?
I don't think it was anybody like that kind of official in quote marks, like the usual. But I mean, I looked on the conspiracy Reddit feed, and they weren't touching it. But of course, some guy on his radio has Donald Trump on, and he says, "Oh, what do you think of the idea that they found a pillow over Scalia's face?" And Donald Trump's like, "Oh yeah, that's terrible. That's just terrible. I can't believe that." No proof at all. And poor Antonin Scalia's son has to issue a statement that said, "No, my father wasn't assassinated by conspirators trying to make America secular and gay." It's crazy. nothing like this can happen anymore without there being some kind of conspiracy.
Oh, no, it's instant.
I remember when the attack on Charlie Hebdo, there was like 3 days after that, there was a post online about how it was a false flag operation.
Yeah, I just delete or unsee or whatever you click on when it comes to stuff like that.
I wish I could unsee it.
People who use false flag, I just unfriend generally. So you can be my Facebook friend, but when it's like, no, it was really this. But we love conspiracies and we talk about them. But sorry, we love to talk about people who talk about conspiracies, but not necessarily the conspiracy themselves. I don't know what that is.
No conspiracy here. City Council met last Thursday, and this is our Guelph Beats segment for this week. I'm not sure if
which
that's
needs its own
music.
Theme.
Yeah,
we need some Guelph Beats music, like dun, dun, dun.
It's the Guelph Beat Hour. Dun, 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 dun. I don't know. Anyway,
needs work.
It needs work. Definitely.
Needs work
on top of all the other work we do. Guelph City Council had an infrastructure or a meeting about infrastructure. Basically what this comes from is, of course, the Liberal government is promising money for infrastructure for cities. No one is precisely sure what the amount is going to be, how it's going to be doled out, what the measurements are going to be in terms of how much and when people will get. But there is a fairly, I don't know if you want to call it a deadline, but there is the goal of having shovels in the ground this coming construction year. And so the city of Guelph wants to have its ducks in a row so that they can, when the money train arrives, they can get their tickets punched. So we have a list of A-list projects, a list of B-list projects, and a lot of people... Well, there's a lot of stuff on the dock. I mean, this is like
you were at the meeting. What were the ones that sort of piqued people's interest?
I got there at the end of the meeting because it was like I was going on.
Oh, that's
we were
yeah.
doing the show last
that's right.
week. So I'm not sure what piqued people's interest.
I guess we'll need to judge by the letters in the trib as to what people are wound about as soon as they hear that.
I know.
Because there was that grumbling about volume taxes might go up a little bit just to pay for this stuff.
Well, the grumbling is. If not that it's necessarily grumbling, but the main focus has been the Capital Renewal Reserve Fund, which is seriously depleted, which the various levels of governance may be looking at. Like the way these projects are typically divvied is it's a third, and a third.
Mm-hmm.
But currently, Guelph is sitting at $3.7 million in the reserve fund,
which is
going to get you far.
Yeah. So I think they're hoping for a very large injection, and of course. I think the priority is going to be given to shovel ready, as you said. It's like, okay, what do we really need to get rolling right away?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as we know, it's the kind of thing that's supposed to create a legacy and create jobs as well. If you think back, you know, anything, a good example in the past is anything centennial. Centennial year was a huge year for infrastructure in terms of things getting built. There'd be a Centennial Arena, Centennial Bridge, Centennial Park in Etobicoke. which is made of garbage. true story. So, yeah, these are the kind of things that we're talking about. And I love the division. It was either Leanne Piper or somebody brought it up about sexy and non-sexy.
Yeah.
All I could think was, like, if you get Barry White to present it, it would all be kind of sexy. He's like, oh, I love this bridge project, baby. Just put baby after it, and that's fine. But, yeah, so...
We're going to repave St. Silver Creek Parkway.
Yeah. Oh, see, you just need to add the tone to it. And it's like, yeah, Vic Road Rec Center, baby. Which is a good place to see roller derby, among other things, right now. Anyway, yeah, so streets fixed, like Medcalf, Eastview upgraded, sidewalks, the main library, I think, was mentioned, which is just sort of a back burner, front burner bang. Oh, my God, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. Tyler, people. But anyway, that's my theory about the library. converting to LED lights, all of these things count as infrastructure. It's vast and unlimited as to what you can do. And I think one's not just sort of brownfieldy things, but things that could show a bit of a cost savings, like LED lights. If you can say, yeah, we're going to spend this amount of money, but we'll save this amount of money, would probably be green lighted right away because it's green. It's sexy. LED lighting isn't really sexy, but it's very good, speaking as a tradesperson. And then other things too, like shining up Goldie Mill sounds interesting because it is getting a little bit – I mean, it is a ruin, but, you know, yeah, a lot of events happen there, like that Potter's Market and
it
things.
It is like the nicest ruin you'll ever go to.
Yeah, it's a stylish ruin, yeah. So
– yeah, the sexy and non-sexy thing is interesting, and things like – building a new library on Baker Street is considered a quote-unquote sexy project. Repaving streets, not so sexy. Or doing...
Which is what the mayor had said,
right,
by the way.
Well, and
he's interested in non-sexy. In a good way.
I think that's fair, actually.
Absolutely.
I think that's a perfectly valid thing. And in terms of my thinking about this, it's like I almost lean towards the non-sexy because it's like, yeah, you don't get to point to a building and say, yeah, we built that on our watch. But on the other hand, you're ensuring – I think there's a better chance of ensuring long-term sustainability for things in the city. And, you know, we have some buildings that are falling apart, some buildings that need new roofs, some buildings that need, you know, desperate, you know, new infrastructure. And then we have things coming online like the condo – that's going into the Woods site. All that sewage needs to be replaced because
And the pipe is going in.
Yeah,
I mean they don't marry the two projects,
right?
You know, they never say that digging at York and Windham is anything to do with the condos, but it is. I mean, because we know a pipe went in for that stuff before the projects were even approved. So there's obviously some forward thinking going on.
Oh yeah, no,
for Tricar and Woods.
Well, it was the same for the Beverly Street or for the old Biltmore site is when they dug up Beverly Street last year. All the piping that would service the apartment building going on Biltmore, where a Biltmore factory used to be, went in too. Why?
Yes.
Because it just makes sense. While we have the street dug up, we'll do everything we're going to do.
And as I always say about these kinds of things, people who are concerned about developments, unless you see pipes, large and small, and conduits... there's no development going in. But there may be in the future. This was the discussion again with the Niska Bridge, which needs to be replaced, as we've talked about before. And it must be on the list because it really needs to be replaced. So actually, I think it sort of supersedes. It's beyond the list. That's happening, right?
Yeah, no,
that's
that
not
isn't
infrastructure
on the list.
Money. No. But that's the kind of thing. There'll be another decrepit bridge in town that needs some cash.
Like the Niska Bridge thing is happening this year already. And there's a couple other things on the list that, like the police headquarters, I mean, it's already happening.
Yeah, I know where to put the ammo. I need to build an ammo room. It's true. I'm not being facetious. That's like an actual thing.
Well, they're also expanding the holding facilities in there, too. Apparently, Guelph, one of the lowest crime cities in the country, needs more jail space.
Yeah, those people they kick out of. But, club, you know, of your choice, yeah.
But, you know, things like the two parkades. They're proposing downtown. The Neve Street one is going to – part of that's going to be covered by Metrolinx.
Yeah, and they have to.
So, I mean
– GO stations have parking generally.
Right.
Not even generally. You check out some of the ones in GTA if you're ever driving along the 401 out Whitby Oshaway. Some of those garages are – you know, you wonder – they look like they're in the middle of nowhere, but 2,000 cars can park there.
Yeah.
Because that's – regardless of what people think about GO trains, they are a car-driven enterprise.
Yeah.
Even though Central Station – and speaking of Central Station, I was surprised that that's getting a bit of a makeover. This may be a bit of an aside from the infrastructure thing. It was like I saw something about improving Central Station, which just opened. Like what?
Well, that's
did they mean the Via Station?
They mean the Via Station.
I don't know why they didn't just say the Via Station then.
Because it's technically the whole thing was supposed to, like, when it started, like, I guess it was almost 5 years ago.
The grand
now,
plan, yeah.
It was to renovate the Via station as well as build the new bus.
But the Via's.
Bus holes, so that Via Go. This was when Via had station agents in the Via station.
Love
Via
them.
Go, Greyhound all had counters in there.
Uh huh.
And to my knowledge, Greyhound has since moved in there about 3 years after they were supposed to, but that's neither here nor there. But that's. I think the problem was, and I'm not 100% sure, that because the train station is a heritage building,
yes,
there's been some trouble getting stuff going.
And I think there. It's also the multiple levels as well,
yeah,
in terms of federal, provincial,
exactly.
and municipal. So it's like all three levels are involved because of the property that it's on. And I think back in the day when they built them, the railway owned it, right?
Yeah.
So then that again. And I think it was a federal enterprise back then. So it's, there's sort of a complexity to it. But I hope they keep that tile floor. You know, that's the kind of thing you say, wow, that's pretty cool. Like,
there's
at least two or three album covers that have got that on it somewhere in this town. So, yeah, but that's just me waxing about the old, you know, waiting for the train in a really uncomfortable chair. The train that never comes because it's delayed. No, not the go trains.
The Via.
The Via. Yeah, that poor Via. But anyway, if we do see GO Train's frequency increasing, which sounds like that's the plan, then you're going
to
need.
It's supposed to be this year.
Need a better station.
Well, we need. I mean, yeah, that there needs to be improvements in there for sure.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there's no Via agent in there anymore, so it's just like this
robot, or no, the machine.
Well, there is a machine there, but I mean, it's like this cold. I mean, the last time I was in there, this was before Greyhound moved in there, this cold, caustic place where, you know, there was just nothing and nobody, and, like, there were some pamphlets.
Not even a cup of tea. Oh, my God.
Like, yeah. Well, there's vending machines in there, but still, I mean, it's kind of sad, this old building just sitting there.
Empty. So it needs to be kind of zhuzhed up and made presentable for...
Which was always part of the plan when this thing was started.
I think they should make it sexy infrastructure. Put a small branch library inside the back there. And you can sign out books on your way to where you're going. Makes total sense.
That does make sense.
Yeah, it
actually,
does make
getting
sense.
Getting on the train, take out a book before you get on the train. Yeah, actually, I do like that.
Put that on the list there, Cam. No, I'm just kidding. He's like, shut up, Hertz. No. Kevin and I get along. Don't get me wrong. It's like, why do you guys feel you can make the decision? So, you should run for office. Maybe I should.
I mean, there is stuff like buying more buses. That I think that's part of the B plan is buying more buses, renovating the Victoria Rec Centers on the A list, upgrades to Eastview Road. I think it would be nice if there was sort of a nice mix, if they got like one quote unquote sexy project,
yeah,
and then put the rest into like making sure the buildings that we currently have are the best that they can possibly be in.
And we shouldn't forget as well that I think part of it is what they call social infrastructure, in that I think they want to put not just structures but money towards mm-hmm. projects for seniors.
Right.
I think they mentioned something about facilities for, you know, early learning, childcare kind of things, and what we call the cultural infrastructure, like I mentioned off the top, the Victoria Road Rec Center, and I think the one in the South End as well, right?
This can be the South End Rec Center.
South End Rec Center is in high demand.
Yeah.
Like,
I think it's on the B list.
Yeah, which is, that is the happening part of town in terms of bodies coming to town, right? Like, they have their services now, but they don't have that, the hub that the West and Vic
right.
and the East and, my God, what is it to the north? Walmart. So the cultural hub of Woodlawn Road. It really is. You should go there sometime. Maybe not. I don't know. But
okay. There we go.
It's time for a fisherman's friend, my man.
We
should probably break.
It sounds like it. We're going to play some music.
Yes.
And take some cough candies. And
yes.
We'll be right back with some more issues here on Open Sources Guelph. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
My name is Bahmuda, and you are listening to CFRU 93.3 FM.
I've been stranded at the door outside. You're never gonna let me in.
And that was Bashi Bullitt from her new CD, or just out, just recently out, Good Advice. She was on a supporting tour and was here in Guelph during Hillside Inside.
Oh, yeah.
Played that whole darn thing, actually. You know, St. George's is a fantastic show. And I didn't play that because I completely love her. I just did because the song directly relates to not the next topic, but after that. It's called Let Me In. That one's for you, Ezra.
You'll get that joke later like
who
I did.
Who does not listen to that show, but you'll get it.
All right, first up. Last week, the Liberal government marked 100 days in office, and there was actually a panel here on the University of Guelph campus that I attended. That was a couple of U of G profs, plus a political prof from the University of Waterloo, plus, not coincidentally enough, our local MP, Lloyd Longfield.
Oh, fancy that.
Is a member
friend
of said government, friend of the show, Lloyd Longfield, who once tweeted that he's very excited about coming back on the show and answering more questions. I don't think he understands what we do here.
Oh, send that tweet around.
But that's okay.
Maybe Justin will see it. We're working on that, by the way.
I don't know, because Justin's...
I'm working on that.
Justin's had kind of a rough week because he's had to...
He's welcome anytime. I emailed him.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know that form? If he's answering questions about eating hot dogs on Twitter, I think he can answer, you know, can you come on our show?
Because that works. Anyway.
If you're listening, Justin, we're waiting.
Anyway, poor Justin has had a hard week. There's been questions about the Iraq mission, against ISIS, government troubles, and of course the news yesterday, Bombardier was cutting jobs even after they got bailout money.
With
from
big
Quebec.
Smiles on their faces, by the way.
Oh my God, that was a horrible press conference.
I wish the working week was still going because I'd dedicate a whole show to that one.
Well, no, that was a weird press conference because they did the announcement that they were teaming up with Air Canada. Air Canada was they have a new
this
contract.
This is great. This is a great thing.
And they were high-fiving each other pretty much. And then the news broke at the same time that they're cutting 7,000 jobs. So, of course, they have the one press conference first because the good news, bad news press conferences. And so somebody asked them at the good news press conference, like, what about all the jobs? They're like, oh, we'll answer that this afternoon. Like, we're busy high-fiving here, yo, so... That was just awful. That was nobody looked good there.
No, it reminds me of the Christmas party where they fired everybody at the place I worked, but it was exactly like that. Like, what do you mean? Yeah, you have no job.
Enjoy the open bar. You won't be working tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that was exactly how it went down. A story for another day.
But that doesn't necessarily pertain to the Liberals, but of course, who has their hand out now but Bombardier and... They're looking for federal money to bolster them. And, of course, Philippe Couillard from the Premier of Quebec was like, yeah, the Fed should totally give them money like we did. So here's another economic trouble on the horizon for Liberals. Do they or do they not give Bombardier a bailout?
Well, and this is I guess I'm the socialist of the team, right? But bailouts.
Fair enough.
There is a limit to the bailouts, and there was an interesting discussion, it was on the PNP, about, well, they bailed out the auto industry, why not bail out Bombardier? But they continuously bail out Bombardier. One of the comments was made, it's because of where Bombardier is located. Now, but I know some of the places with the layoffs where I think they've got 1,000 people in Northern Ireland that are losing their jobs. Even when we're talking about, like, rendering an area kind of destitute, they don't have a huge population.
Yeah.
Serious job loss there, or... friends there or not. And in Canada too, obviously, 7,000 bodies, a lot of people. And it sounds like it's in the – I wasn't able to do the drilling down on it, but it sounds like it was the rail division, right?
I believe so.
Right. But we seem to have derailed here because we're talking about the 100 days, right?
But no, I mean –
It doesn't matter. It's all related, but
– Well, it's all related because one of the things that came out of the panel was just like there's been a lot of goodwill so far.
Yeah.
But there's tremendous challenges ahead because you already have – the oil patch sector with their hand out, they need some bailouts. They want some kind of recovery efforts, or at least some kind of way that they could limp along until oil prices bounce back. And there's some sign that even OPEC now recognizes there's a problem, at least, because OPEC is looking at cutting back production. But then there's this with Bombardier, and then the situation with the Iraq mission where Trudeau was getting it with both barrels in the question period this week. Like, conservatives we're not doing enough. The NDP is like, we're doing too much. So
it's like, you kept your promise. You didn't keep your promise. They did keep the promise on that. They said the jets would be withdrawn.
Right.
Our antique Cold War vintage warplanes will be withdrawn. And then they had this other plan, which is to send more bodies, which seems to have gotten the thumbs up from the rest of the global community, including, God, what's his name again? Sorry, the chief of staff in the States. Totally escapes me is what his name is.
You mean John Kerry?
No, not Kerry, but the actual chief of the armed forces there.
Oh, I can't remember his name.
Anyway, you know that guy? That's the guy I'm talking
about. Either way, the Pentagon's on board.
The Pentagon is on board. They said, good on you, Canada. Thank you for doing what you're doing. And of course, because it was not enough. They love warplanes. There must be somebody involved with warplanes gives them lots of money because, it's all that business we saw with the new plane, which was sunk.
Right.
What did they – not the rethink, what do they call it, back to the table? Not to complain about conservatives because we are supposed to be talking about the liberals. In terms of promises kept, there's something in the language though because if you recall back during the election, Trudeau on tour and everybody, part of the policies – and I looked it up again just to make sure I'd heard it correctly – the work will begin within 100 days. Now, the work beginning is very different from we will have this done.
Right.
So the refugees, they didn't hit the number. It was like the work will begin. With the conference in Paris, they did say in their policy booklet, what was it again? Thumbs up to the middle class. It's just a ridiculous name. They did say in that it was like, okay, we're going to go to Paris. And within 90 days of Paris, we will have a plan. That's not actually doing anything yet, right? So they can check all the boxes they like about, we did this, this, and this. But, are they going to get through the whole list within the 100 days? I don't think so, which is a very artificial construct, too. I think it was Jennifer Ditchburn pointed out. She said, you know what? They're the ones that are kind of talking it up.
Somebody had to create the first 100 hashtag.
Yeah. So it's almost a
not and the PMO was using it pretty freely.
Well, exactly, because that's there. They came up with the baseline. They came out. They drew the boundaries, saying, "Okay, we're gonna in 100 days, we're gonna do this." Because 101 days is like, well, whatever. 200 days. What did you say? 1,000 and what are left? Like,
yeah, 1,300.
They've got some time, and obviously, not massive fan of liberals, but I thought they sort of hit the ground running, really. Like, somebody who's not easily impressed, considering the sort of resistance and everything from the last government, a lot of things happened right away.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as if they just sort of sat on their hands. It's like, you're going to keep some – it's amazing in some ways when a government keeps a promise at all, really.
Well, a lot of it was – and this was pointed out in the panel. A lot of it's just change in tone, right? It's like a lot of it was – renaming key ministries to reflect the situation, like putting science back in there, making a statement saying we're going to
climate change.
Right. We're going to put our faith in science rather than ideology. Gender parity was a big one that got talked about a lot. And
The balanced cabinet.
Right.
Huge.
And it was pointed out that, it extends – a lot of the discussion was the gender parity cabinet, but there was also a lot of diversity reflected in that. You have more brown faces in cabinet, more indigenous faces in cabinet, French speakers from not Quebec in there too. So there's an incredible bench. And as someone I can't remember who on the panel pointed out, it's like it's not just – tokenism. There are people in keep, like, can you think of a better defense minister than Harjit Sajjan?
Mr. Kickass, yeah.
Right. It's not just that he's a Sikh. He is supremely qualified to be the defense minister.
And that's it. And I don't think we saw that with the previous government at all. In some respects, maybe anything to do with business and that, but there were a lot of people lacking. Fantino, you can think off the top of my head. Well, there were the people that hung around like Baird and McKay that probably had some skills. Or someone like Chris Alexander was supposed to, but...
Well, McKay definitely had the skills to be a justice minister. And the thing about...
Possibly prime minister in the future. We'll see.
Well, the thing about Fantino was his lack of skill was... Nobody expected. He was a superstar. He was the police chief of Toronto, the commissioner of the OPP. Who would have thought he would have been so terribly ineffective as a politician, as a member of parliament, and as a cabinet minister? It's kind of bizarre how that went out.
And then they've got Bill Blair, who is like the equivalent now with the liberals. So
Well, and he's also...
He's doing the marijuana review. I mean, could we have seen that in a conservative government? No.
That would have been...
Not at all. You have to go out behind the dumpster where Stephen is exiting the door to buy your marijuana. You won't be able to do it in a shop. Seriously, though, right?
But yeah, well, less ideology, too. I mean, the Mother Canada...
Oh, that thing.
That's done. The Victims of Communism Memorial is off the Supreme Court's front lawn.
We're going to move it somewhere.
And it's going to be smaller. And, you know, these kind of decisions that seem to be purely motivated by the fact of, you know, trying to secure votes or to prove some kind of ideological bona fides seems to be done, which, you know, is a relief to a lot of people.
Yes.
And, you know, the things about, you know, believing in government again.
Yeah. Even those like me who are like reticent to support the liberals outright, it's like, yeah, you know what? This is more like what we expect at Parliament Hill and in this country. When you think about, you know, those classic concepts of Canadian, it's like, yeah, Canada to come back to the barbecue again.
And I think the stumble so far, like, I think it comes from a lack of experience. I mean, to revisit this panel, somebody pointed out that, like, 18 of the cabinet ministers were rookie MPs as well.
Yeah, but like you say, stacks of qualifications.
Right.
And that's huge.
I think part of the problem has been messaging. And I think we talked about this before when we were talking about Iraq, that, you know, just... they needed to get out in front of that more to explain more thoroughly, and perhaps they still need to give a proper explanation about why this is a non-combat mission, even though we're having more people on the ground potentially in harm's way versus jets. I mean, I may understand the distinction. I don't 100% understand the extinction, and one of the things that makes me mad is we had no conversation at all about whether we should be involved in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
There was never, you know...
Very true.
Nobody stopped, and it just seemed like with absolute certainty we were going to stay in Iraq in some capacity, and it wasn't on the table getting out of Iraq completely.
Well, and as I was saying about getting back to being, you know, Canadian in quotes or whatever, I think what they tried to do structurally with the ISIS/Iraq mission was to harken back to the Blue Beret days.
Yeah.
We're there to help out.
Maybe.
Or we're there to just sort of be the ref and make sure everything's cool. But you can bet, as would happen under the previous administration, when they did come under fire, they're going to give her back.
Right.
And no one is going to say, you know, don't take a shot at ISIS, because everybody wants to take a shot at the Daesh, right? As we were talking last week.
Yeah.
It's like that is what's needed. So the question is how much training is needed. And as our guest said last week, it's like they're ready to go. They
Not
just
much.
Need the gear.
Yeah.
And he was pro-airstrikes too, right? But they're getting lots of airstrikes. Right.
Well, I don't think air power is the problem.
No,
there.
Air power is definitely not the problem.
Everybody's sending air power because no one wants to put boots on the ground, and so they think air power is the compromise.
Remember what I was saying about, so I wish somebody would draw a graphic. Somebody has drawn a graphic of who is against who, and it's mind-blowing, and it seems to be changing daily, too, as mm-hmm. we've seen. It's like, oh, it's Russia and Turkey. Oh, no, wait, it's Syria and Russia and Turkey. And no, wait, it's the Kurds.
And there's supposed to be a ceasefire that's going into effect.
Ceasefire, good Lord.
And... there's no guarantee that the fire is going to cease because a lot of key elements involved in that fight are on board. Like ISIS isn't part of the ceasefire.
And
so.
That seems like the ideal environment to send Blue Berets, which is something they don't do anymore.
No.
And I don't mean just Canada. I mean the UN. So it's like
this
to me is the ideal. Get to the Blue Berets in there. But I guess there's just so many parties and a lot of them. Well, UN Security Council is quite a few of them, including US and Russia permanent members. It's complicated. So I don't know. I think they did all right in terms of coming up with a plan that wasn't just complete nonsense to please both the hawks, but they'll never please the Conservatives or the NDP for that matter.
Well,
sounds like the NDP doesn't want anything to happen militarily.
And that's been a traditional NDP stance.
Yeah. Support the troops, bring them home. But they
for the Conservatives, yeah. I mean, that certainly seems ideologically driven still and part of their problem. Although Lloyd Longfield did pay them a unique compliment in terms of, you know, the gender parity issue. He said the four strongest people on the Conservative bench right now, he said, are four women. So I assume he included Rona Ambrose in that.
Well, yeah, Ambrose, can we name them?
He didn't name them.
Lisa Raitt.
Probably Lisa Raitt. Lisa Raitt would definitely be one. Michelle Rempel might be another.
And we'll come up with a fourth eventually.
She used to be the Minister of Women, Kelly
Leach.
This
is our own little internal tribute. Kelly Leach is probably one of them, yeah. I'm sure. Okay. She's also been tapped as a potential leadership candidate. We shall see what barbaric cultural practices they'll be fighting.
Speaking of barbaric cultural practices,
yes.
The NDP bard, Ezra Levant, and the Rebel from covering Alberta press events. On Tuesday, they made this announcement, and by Tuesday night, there were signs that the NDP was relenting. And Wednesday, Rachel Notley did say, yes, the Rebel was welcome to attend government pressers and lockups to cover the Alberta legislature. A lot of people have noted that she's pretty much handed Ezra Levant a moral victory because it's like, this is exactly what he wants. This is exactly what he likes. He wants the fight. He loves the fight. And the galling part is everybody realized, well, perhaps with the exception of a couple of people, that, you know, yeah, as repugnant as you may find the Rebel, the government can't step in and start saying you're a media outlet and you're not a media outlet.
Well, and that became the burning question as well, not just the fact that Levant's reaction was, and his team, was what it was, because we expect nothing less of him. And I can't believe that the NDP's people, the spin people, didn't see that coming, because they know exactly how this guy works.
Yeah.
He just gnaws away at a point like that. And this too sort of begs the question, which, you know, is always a burning question, who is a journalist, right? And there was some implication that online people aren't journalists. I mean, they mentioned Rabble, with whom I was a very early podcast with them a lot of years ago now, and all I really did, and this is the thing about journalistic qualifications, if you show up with a little recorder and sort of look journal with a notepad, people very rarely ask you questions unless it's a security issue. Mm-hmm. And one of the things with these, the Rebels, what a ridiculous name for these guys. It's like completely co-opted. The Rebellious, I don't know. If you could see the look on my face. But one of the events was like, no, they were complaining about an event where no media were allowed. They didn't allow us in. It was like, they didn't allow anyone in.
Yeah.
But then, of course, a lot of the, let's say the players, a lot of the commentary I saw from the players, like my Facebook BFF, Neil McDonald, was like, you guys really blew it, because there's no standards. Like you can be less than a high, you could graduate grade 8. There's no department of standards for journalists. I mean, or you could graduate from Ryerson if you show up with a notepad and a computer, whatever. So where it's a sliding scale in terms of who is a journalist. Now, these folks are complete bombasts. As far as in terms of just being opinion, not my opinion, but if you're doing a website that's pure opinion, the first thing I saw on this was like, Rachel Notley is a bully.
Yeah.
That's not journalism. You're making some kind of statement. Mm-hmm. That's your opinion, right? And I know that counts in the greater body of journalistic work, but there's no reporting there.
No.
And if you're going to just go to a presser or whatever and hound people, you're just annoying and they want rid of you. So, but to say you're not a journalist, you should say, well, we want rid of you because you're annoying and you're disrupting everything, not because you're a journalist or not a journalist.
Yeah, it's – no, the thing about
– because you're – in my view, you're a journalist.
Thank you. In my view, I'm a journalist.
Guelph political journalist. I was a sometime journalist, but right now I'm just a pundit. But this, you know, this guy shows up at something. He's and no one's ever – have you ever gotten the boots from anything? The conservative thing across the way.
The PM thing in 11.
Interesting.
And I did manage to like
– Levant's people?
I did manage to Levant my way in.
This is an outrage.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, the thing about the Notley crew screwed this up, and they kept screwing it up. First of all, there's like, we're not letting in online outlets. We're not recognizing online outlets. And as soon as you say that, well, you're going to have to go into the parliamentary press gallery and kick out Huffington Post and BuzzFeed and Vox and all these web outlets that are now considered legitimate media outlets.
And Rabble.
Yeah. The Toronto West, things like that, where people genuinely recognize as news. Vice, good one. Yeah, genuine news sources, people recognize, all digital entities. So they walked that back and they said, well, no, we're just going to treat the Rebel. They were saying the Rebel specifically is banned because Ezra Levant, in one of his many turns on the stand in defamation cases, said he was not a journalist, that he was a pundit or a commentator. So you're now saying that you're not going to let in journalists
who, because they're jerks. Yeah.
Well, you're not going to let in journalists from media outlets owned by people who aren't journalists, which just about kicks everyone out of the press gallery because newspapers aren't even owned by journalists anymore. They're owned by corporations. So then they finally had to relent and say, okay, we'll let the rebel in. And it's just like they were feeding the beast the whole time. And you don't need to
shut them up.
You don't need to convince throw them these a people that the NDP is bad. Esler Van has sort of made it his business to get rid of the NDP. And I looked at some of the comments on the post about Rachel Notley banning the rebel, and including, quote, the MSM have sold their collective souls to the devil, that being the UN, unquote. G&M, meaning Globe and Mail, is just pure socialist / liberal tongue-bathing spew,
what?
Unquote.
The Globe.
This was a reference to something posted in the Globe. And then finally, quote, hey, Notley, you Nazi pig, go blank yourself.
Oh,
three exclamation points, unquote.
Classy. So these are classy stuff.
And then the first thing you go on the Rebel, you see he has this link on there that says, buy your own Fire Win sign. Win, of course, meaning Kathleen Wynne, another popular
nowhere near veteran. Alberta, by the way.
Well, still, he's saying this is a journalistic outfit, but I'm selling signs that say, fire the duly elected premier of the country.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, it was painful when I looked at their website just to see what was going on. And the first thing I saw was that guy, Tommy Robinson, if you don't know the name, he was with the English Defense League in the UK, and he's with a group called Pegida now, who want Muslims out of the UK. And if you know anything about the English Defense League or Pegida, Google them. Don't read their websites. Read something from the BBC or something. The guy is a racist. An absolute racist, avowed, I want Muslims out of my country. Mm-hmm. And funny thing is, not even this country. He's talking about the UK.
Right.
But Levant and company are promoting it as some kind of like, well, he should have the right to say this. Things pass as free speech all the time that are not free speech. And when I see a website where somebody's like giving time to somebody who's an outright racist, I'm not interested. To me, that's not journalism at all.
And there was Esler Levant's pretty handy about kicking people out of his stuff, because he had a public meeting last summer about stuff going on in Alberta, and a freelance reporter named Alahi Pagazzo went, and apparently she was on his no-go list, but kicked out of the event, and they called the police on her, even though she had went online, reserved two tickets as per the request.
Was dragged out of there.
She wasn't dragged out of there.
No, but then
they tried to, and then they called the police to drag her out, and their police arrived and were like, well, this is stupid. We're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so he's fairly handy. Having said all that,
that was the emergency meeting.
Right.
Not least come to power.
Having said all that, though, they have the right to be there at those pressers, and God knows if I were to be the victim of somebody saying I can go into City Hall and cover City Hall because
you're
going
to double down.
Right. I would hope they would come to my defense, too. And that's the thing is the government can't say you're a journalist or not, especially these days where anyone with a phone can be a journalist.
Yeah, especially when it rings during your show there. There's a call coming in from Rachel Notley to thank us for covering this. And Ezra, too, although he,
That would be interesting.
I don't think Ezra would thank us somehow. Should get him on.
Not publicly.
I'm going to put him on my hot list of people. Number one, Justin. Number two, Ezra.
We should get a panel with those two.
Yeah. Number three is still Pierre Poutine, but that's almost becoming stale. So.
Oh, well. You can stay connected with Open Sources all week long. Just go to our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Go to our Facebook page, Open Sources Newswire, our Twitter feed at @OS_Guelph, and you can always download our podcast on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. Listen to us anytime, anywhere, on whatever you listen to fine podcasts on. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz, Facebook and Twitter, and the Spanner Book. There was a thing. Thank you for reposting my blog posting. So
that's why I'm here.
I spent a lot of time in the medical community in the past few weeks, so points to ponder. Please check it out if you're interested, and give me some feedback on what we're talking about. So I'm just a guy who talks about stuff. Pundit, not a journalist, unlike Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico.
There you
we're
going to
work on
Scotty
our...
He just compared himself to Ezra Levant.
On our intros and outros.
You can quote him now. Stay tuned
I'm just
for DJ...
start yelling.
Stay tuned for
Doesn't
DJ
sound good
Sounds
to me.
Good to
there
me.
You go.
Sorry.
No, it does.
DJ sounds good to me at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And until next Thursday, this has been Open Sources. Tune in next week for more, hopefully, good news.